Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Hello and welcome to Perspective. I'm Beth Espy. Tonight, we're continuing our election interviews, speaking to existing members of the House of Keys who are seeking re-election. I'm joined today by one of only two women in the Keys. She's represented her constituency since 1996, having started her political career in Douglas Town Council. Since she was first elected, she's been a member of eight different departments, including Home Affairs, Education, Local Government, and more recently, the Department of Community, Culture and Leisure. She's also chair the Isle of Man Water Authority and the Planning Committee. She's recognised as being one of the most outspoken members of the Manx Parliament and was a member of the APG, or Alliance for Progressive Government, with the aim of putting forward alternative policies and scrutinising the executive. She is Brenda Cannell, MHK for East Douglas. Mrs Cannell, good evening.
Thank you. Good evening.
Have you done enough in the past 5 years to deserve re-election?
Well, that decision is going to be up to the electorate in Douglas East. What I can say is that I'm out canvassing. I'm doing a lot of work on the doorstep in reaching as many people as I can. And the response has been very, very encouraging so far.
You haven't yet produced a manifesto for 2011. Many members haven't as yet. But what is it that you're actually standing for this time?
Well, first of all, I think I don't never ever produce a manifesto until I've canvassed the electorate, because I want to hear what the issues are from the public, because your first responsibility as a member of the House of Keys is to represent the people under the Representation of Peoples Act.
But as an MHK for East Douglas, really, you need to be abreast of what the issues are already.
Oh, I know what the issues are that I think are going to affect us over the next 5-10 years, and not unsurprisingly, the public out there are very aware of them also. But top of the list, of course, is the economy with the people. But what's worrying them over the economy, particularly with this increase in VAT contribution hitting us quite hard again, the third time in a row from the United Kingdom, is the people are concerned about the delivery of public services. And in particular, they're concerned that the health service may well be cut back, education may well be cut back, and social services, because from the public's perspective, out of all of the services that government provide, those are the three main core services that they don't want to see any cuts in. So, you know, the next government's going to have to work very, very hard to actually reassure the people that, in fact, they're not going to make any cutbacks there, but they need to go a step further. They need to not just merely focus on cut it and see, we'll cut services or we'll cut this or cut that or cut jobs and we'll see how things go. They need more of a medium, long-term strategic view, in my opinion, and they need to be revaluing things like the income tax situation that we have on the Isle of Man, and also the value-added tax, and that's going to take some strength, some character, some honesty and integrity. So we do need a very strong assembly coming in next time and a particularly dynamic government to lead.
It's interesting, you talk about the VAT sharing arrangement, and we were told about the second blow to that in the final Timward for this administration. Now, there was a presentation for the members on the Monday before that official announcement in Timward, but you weren't there. Why?
No, I wasn't there. I was actually at a breast cancer action group meeting, and that's why I wasn't there. But I was at the one prior to that, where we were told basically nothing at all. We were just told that we mustn't talk about anything or heighten anything with the media because things were at a very delicate and sensitive stage. But, you know, the rumour in government offices, especially in the members' quarters, the rumours in the corridors, you usually get to know in the corridor what's going to be announced before it is announced. So I fully expected that they were going to come back and hit us again.
But it is interesting, though, that, I mean, that was arguably one of the most important presentations that this Parliament had to go to, and you felt it was more acceptable to go to a personal cause rather than go along to that and get all the facts.
It's not a personal cause. It's a very public cause, and health issues affect everybody. It wasn't a case of of making a judgment call. I'd already had arranged to go to this meeting. The invitation to go to the VAT presentation came at a very last minute. But what is important is not how many presentations you turn up to, because the APG and I together always had the view that these presentations behind closed doors in private is to tell you what they want you to know, not necessarily what you need to know. And what's important is that what the public are told and what is debated in open and transparent government, both in Keys and in Tynwald. What is essential, though, is not just the fact that we've received the news and we've been hit again. What is essential that we focus now on the future. And I firmly believe that we are going to have to reevaluate and study setting and collecting our own value-added tax, because at the moment, the agreement with the United Kingdom that keeps changing courses and has done three times since 2007, each time hitting us for a greater amount, there is no guarantee that they're not going to come back in another 2 years' time. And indeed, on both sides of the coin, the arrangement is to give 2 years' notice. There is nothing stopping United Kingdom from coming back and saying, right, well, we're sick of this. You're on your own. You've got 2 years' notice. We'll cut the tie. Where would that leave the Isle of Man? We have no contingency. We haven't even considered contingency. It's only just now that Treasury are starting, they're going to start to accumulate figures so that they have an idea of what we actually generate on island with VAT.
But your suggestions were pretty remarkable, though, when you stood up to make your contribution during the debate that was had on this. I mean, you said there shouldn't have been any negotiation with the UK Treasury. They should have been told a rearrangement would have to wait until after our election. If they didn't like it, tough, let them start withdrawal proceedings. I mean, in what way would that have made any political or financial sense for the Isle of Man?
It would have given some breathing space.
It wouldn't. The UK, I mean, as we were told, the UK really has very little regard for the Isle of Man. I mean, it really doesn't mean very much to it. So it wouldn't have given us breathing space. They would have just said, okay get on with it.
So what you're saying is that we ought to accept everything that we're told and just accept it and go belly up. That has never, ever been my view, nor has it been shared by groups of my colleagues over the years.
But no, sorry, Mrs. Campbell, but no one has any idea what abrogation would actually mean for the island, would
well,
it?
Well, I'm not talking about abrogation. You see, every time you discuss or you mention, you know, this business about setting and collecting our own value-added tax, people say, oh, abrogation, oh, it'll have a devastating effect on this, that and the other. There is no basis for coming to that conclusion because we have never done the study, and the study needs to be done. We need to identify the negatives if we were to set and collect our own value-added tax, and also the positives. And then we need to focus on those negatives to see how we could recover from those negatives. Now, until we do that study, we don't know where we are. But we do know at the moment we're totally reliant on this relationship with the United Kingdom. And it's not good enough for a responsible government. You need medium long-term strategy and solutions to these problems. Look what's going to happen on the 6th of April 2012. The ARRI, which is a mechanism for Treasury to recoup some of the lost income following the introduction of the 010. This is company taxation. I'm talking about income tax now, company taxation. That's going to end next year. We were announced it's going to end. Now, what is the contingency for that? What are Treasury going to put in place instead of? Because that will be devastating to our income. So not only has our income been greatly reduced by this hit by the VAT situation by the UK, we're also going to be losing vital revenue in terms of income tax. And I think really, Beth, what needs to be done, as well as re-evaluating this business as setting and collecting our own value-added tax, we really do need to put a high-powered commission together to look at our taxation policy for the future. We've got the European Code Group breathing down our neck at the moment and saying, oh, you know, the ARRI is unfair, it's got to go. And of course, it's all part of this string of measures that came in with the 010 in 2006. So those are urgent matters which need to be addressed as soon as the new House is elected and the new government is in place.
I'd just like to pick up on what you said when we started talking about the VAT arrangement and that the issue of presentations and how you and the APG, when you were a member of them, when that alliance was there, felt that you didn't necessarily need to go along to them. Because in Tynwald, especially over the past few months, there have been several comments regarding poor attendance, and I think it'd be fair to say that many of them have been pointed in your direction. Do you think your attendance at meetings for whatever political responsibility you've had, departments, committees, do you think it's been good enough?
I don't have a poor attendance when it comes to committees, departmental responsibilities, standing committees, select committees. I do not have a poor attendance at all. I turn up at the vast majority of all of them. And in fact, I've been responsible in many of those areas because I've actually been the chairperson. So we wouldn't have been able to have those meetings had I not been in the chair. I think possibly what you might be looking at is there was a period in this last term of office where I became extremely disabled and never missed a department meeting, I have to say. The officers used to come out from St John's, pick me up together with my walking stick and take me out there. But there were other things, periphery things, such as presentations, that I just couldn't comfortably get to.
OK, well, you're talking about that major surgery, and I think that was around Christmas 2009.
Yeah, but there was a lead up to that because I had an accident on my knee 2 years prior to that, so it steadily got worse. So that is the only blip, if you like, in terms of not 100% attendance at briefings, but always gave 100% attendance at departments, select committees, standing committees.
So would that include when the time when you were vice chair of the Water Authority? Because from what I can see, and I've got some of the attendance records here, you didn't go to any of the board meetings in the first year, just one extraordinary meeting. And between April 2008 and March 2009, you went to three meetings when other members of the board went to 10 or 11.
Yeah. And the reason for that is that prior to that, I was the chairman of the Water Authority for a good period of years. And then the Chief Minister started to change the makeup of these statutory boards, and he insisted that not only should they have a political chairman, they should also have a political vice chairman. In my view, that was top heavy.
You don't need two politicians.
No, I wasn't being paid. I don't get paid to be a vice chairman. You only get paid to be a chairman, and you get paid to be on a department. You do not get pay to be a vice chair on anything.
But then surely you should have said, actually, I don't feel that I should have this role, and you should have given it up to somebody who perhaps would have gone along to those meetings.
It was said. It was said. To be honest, in those during that period of time, David Cannon had been made the chairman of the Water Authority. He asked me on one occasion if I'd turn up and chair the meeting because he was going to be absent for the majority of the meeting. After that, he and I discussed the makeup of the board, and we both agreed that I should take a back seat and only step in if he was unable to make it. It was a decision that we came to, an amicable decision, because he agreed with me. It was top heavy to have two politicians on a statutory board that is made up of lay members. It was far too top heavy, and it's totally unnecessary. It's good, a deputy is good to be stepping in to cover for the main person, and that's the only role really that a deputy should play.
But with regard to actually being given the role in the first place, I mean, you talked in your mandate interview last week about principles and integrity. Mm-hmm. Surely you should have said, actually, you know, brought that to the fore and publicly said, do you know what, there doesn't need to be a vice chair, there's no need for that role. And
well,
I could
the
be
Chief
doing
Minister
something else.
Knew that there didn't need to be a vice chair. You know, it's not a case of giving it to someone else. David Cannon welcomed me to the position. He knew that I read all of the minutes and all of the reports of every meeting, irrespective of whether or not I actually attended and was in person. I did the work on the minutes and on the reports. And if there was anything that was unclear or I wasn't particularly happy with, that was fed back through to the board. You know, it's being an MHK and having responsibilities and taking roles within government, it's not about turning up to meetings and sitting there and being present in order to claim additional pay, which you only get if you're a chairman or a member of a department. It's about doing the work. It's about actually studying the reports, doing the minutes. And I have a record, a meticulous record of being able to do that and to do that very well.
Okay, well, let's look at your most recent example then, which is when you were the member with designated responsibility for buses in the Department of Community, Culture and Leisure. That timetable changed. Initially, people didn't welcome it with open arms. You resigned. You said you weren't involved in developing the new plans, but you were at meetings where that network was discussed.
So no.
How can you say...
The changes to the timetable were never discussed at divisional level or at department level because they'd all been done and dusted. There was a list of changes. When I talk about changes, it wasn't changes to services, but the removal of certain services in different areas. And I was very concerned about that, as was the minister at the time. And we agreed that if that proved to be negative and not popular with the public, that we would reinstate those services. Now, when that started to become a problem, and I knew that it would, because half of the community in Douglas and Onchan have been totally cut off. Now, this is the community of non-paying passengers, and this is the community of pensioners that are entitled to free travel. They don't have the freedom anymore that they did beforehand. And... I wrote to the minister and said, these are proving to be problems. Will you reinstate these particular services? And he said, oh, we'll review it in 3 months, review it in 3 months. The review came and went and nothing has changed. Those services haven't been reinstated.
It's interesting, though, that you talk about your concerns for those particular people, those people that you mentioned there, because when you were interviewed on Manx Radio when the new timetable was published, you praised it. You said that those people in particular were going to see an improvement in service that it had been added to. So if you were so strongly against it, how could you have publicly come out and said those things?
It wasn't strongly against it. You're totally misreading the situation.
Well, you resigned. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but the bus timetable and the problems and the fact that we'd agreed to reinstate certain services if they proved to be problematic, which was then disregarded and ignored, was the last straw for me. There was a series of things. I did not, I have to admit that I clashed right from the word go at the very first meeting with the new Director of Public Transport, because I didn't like the bullishness attitude that was prevailing within the division. He tried to bully me. He certainly began bullying the staff, and his intention from day one was to get rid of a great number of staff. And I said, hang on here. I can't condone any of this. I need to know what's going on. At every turn, when I tried to find out what was going on, he would go and speak to the minister and say I was interfering. I wanted to speak to the union, for example, because obviously there was a clear clash between him and the union and the workers. And I asked to speak to the union representatives. That was refused. He went through, round my back to the minister, and then I got a text message straight out of the blue from the minister to say, I don't want you meeting with the union, leave it to the officers. Everything was leave to the officers. I went to see the minister and I said, why am I here? Have I got delegated responsibility or not? Because if I have, why is it you're doing everything and I'm not doing anything? It was suggested that I was getting paid. And therefore, because I was getting paid, I should just shut up and put up. I wasn't prepared to tolerate that, Beth.
If the reaction, though, from the public had been more welcoming initially, would you have still resigned?
Probably, yes.
Would you have still resigned? You would have absolutely...
By that time, by the time that the timetable was launched, and within 24 hours, I had members from North Douglas complaining to me.
What I'm saying was, if you hadn't had those members complaining to you, would you have still resigned?
Most likely, yes, because I did not feel comfortable in that department. Not forgetting, I'm a very experienced politician. I put 15 years into the Keys, and you said at the beginning of this programme, I've been on no less than 8 departments.
How many have you resigned from?
I resigned in my second year of office back in 1997-98. From the Department of Trade and Industry because of the fiasco over the building of the new hospital.
Do you think you're a team player, Mrs. Cannell?
With a good team, yes, with an honest team and a team that says what it means and means what it says, yes, absolutely, I will work 110%. But I will not work with people who say one thing and do the opposite.
I think it'd be fair to say, I mean, if we look at your record, I mean, there's no doubt that you put the time and effort in when it's something that you feel passionate about. I mean, let's we talk about the breast cancer service being a prime example, and no one can say that you don't give it your all. Many people do commend the work you do for your individual constituents. But what happens when it comes to working for government? Do you have problems being told what to do?
Actually, you say about work for your particular constituents in terms of the last issue that I ran with. Not one of my constituents has come with me that fell into the category of breast cancer. It was an island issue, and there were island people that made contact with me. I gave sufficient enough, in fact, equal amount of passion to the Commission of Inquiry into the care of young people. I followed that all the way through. I gave evidence to that. I've pushed
to get all of the
recommendations to be implemented.
You said you would pursue that implementation in your 2006 manifesto.
Yeah,
have you done with that?
Well, what happened was that one of the recommendations was that there should be an external review within 3 years. The external review was carried out, and the reporting of that would come to my committee, my scrutiny committee, of which I chaired, because it would have to appear in the government's annual report, which was one of our remits was to look at that and to test and to see whether or not the policies adopted by Tim Wald were in fact being pursued or understood properly and implemented by the various departments.
But have you raised that issue in the past
years? Well, the last two reports on the implementation of the recommendations came to our committee, and then the Chief Minister made a move that they no longer needed to appear on the public record in the public document which our committee scrutinised. Yes, I did raise it in Tim Wald, and we argued and we wrote as a committee very firmly and said this was not acceptable.
Okay, we're nearing the end of the programme, so I just want to go through a couple of other issues. First of all, if you're re-elected, will you take another government post if you're offered one?
If I'm off, yeah, I mean, I don't have an aversion to working for government, but I have to have regard and respect for the person who's leading that department and who's in charge of it.
I mean, you talked about clashing and locking horns as Director of Public Transport in DCCL. I mean, do you think maybe it's time to accept it's you, not them?
No, because it's the first time I've ever clashed with a public servant in 18 years of being in politics.
OK, you believe the Chief Minister should be popularly elected. Who do you think the people want?
What the people want is a government that's going to instil confidence, and what the people want is not just a Chief Minister who commands respect and also isn't afraid to stand up and defend the island most vigorously across in the United Kingdom and elsewhere, but they want a really good team of people around that person. So it's not just one, it's the team approach, and it's got to be very strong, very dynamic, and have some guts, basically, because we're going to need it over the next 5 years.
So are you going to be asking on the doorstep who the people want you to support if you are re-elected?
No, I'm not asking them who they want to be Chief Minister.
But if you think that the Chief Minister should be popularly elected, you should be taking that decision into the next House of Keys if that's how you feel.
We've come to sort of gridlock on that issue, haven't we? Because it's been raised on a number of occasions that in principle, yes, the people should know what the next government's policies are going to be. And then we've got the old guard arguing the opposite, saying we're not like the United Kingdom. We don't have party politics. Without party politics, you can't obviously elect a national leader. And that's the point we're at. I think there's a lot more further debate and detail of in fact how in fact it could happen, so that the people do have a say. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen between now and the election, is it?
Thinking about the tough economic times ahead, if you are re-elected, would you support contributing to your own pension?
Absolutely. We should be contributing to our own pension. And I have to say, for the public record, I have never claimed expenses or petrol allowance ever in 15 years. I've been quite happy to just receive my salary. And I'm quite happy just receiving my flat basic pay, which is paid for by the people, and not getting the additional £10,000 a year for working within government.
Interestingly, you joined the race to fill the vacant seat in Ledgeco in May last year. Do you think that questions your commitment to being an MHK?
No, it doesn't. I was asked asked, would I run, because it was stalemate and we were unable to elect somebody. There was a reluctance to re-elect the person who had vacated the seat, and they wanted a fresh face. But on top of that, I was asked because one of the members of the Legislative Council is currently running with a bill to elect the Legislative Council by public franchise, Mr. David Collister, felt he needed help and assistance, and certainly needed a valuable vote up there in order to get that bill through. And it was on that reason alone that I agreed to let my name go forward.
Well, we are fast approaching the end of the programme, Mrs. Cannell, so just sum up for me in a few seconds why you think you deserve to be re-elected.
I think, it's not a case of I deserve to be re-elected. I think that the people, I would ask the people to re-elect me to continue the strong representation which I've provided for them over the last 15, 18 years. I have strength. I have strength of character. I'm not afraid of speaking out. I'm very open and honest. And most importantly, for the next 5 years, I'm extremely experienced.
Brenda Kennell, Standing Member for East Douglas, thank you for joining us on tonight's Perspective. If you'd like more information about the general election, you can go to Manx Radio's dedicated website, election.manxradio.com. For now, goodbye.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.